The following is an interview with Joanne Gordon, staff assistant to the president. It was conducted by Susan Yao in room 189 of the old executive office building on February 2nd, 1973.
I thought about it after I got off the elevator. Maybe he didn't even hear it.
Oh, well. Very often these are very last minute things. And it really doesn't make much difference. Well, you know that we've been trying to make sure everything's safe for the Nixon Library. And we found from talking with the other libraries that the paper records really need some supplement to identify kind of who did what and who was who in the White House, as well as to discuss functional organization and general assignments or responsibilities of offices, because very often the end product doesn't show who did the work on whatever it is, if you're talking about a major piece of legislation or just an ongoing activity. And the other thing that we're using these for is kind of a background to a future more in-depth oral history project.
This is in conjunction with all the stuff that Trudy's got.
Right. We've talked with everyone from very low-level staffs, you know, secretaries, and often actually they can give us a lot of information on just day-to-day activities in the White House. And then also with people like Mr. Colson, who obviously we couldn't sit down in 1 hour and go over everything he's done at the White House. So he just talked more in general about major areas which need at some time to be talked about in more depth, and talked about some of the things that he did which might not be as well documented in the paper files and so forth. I guess we really try and get some very basic information too. When did you come to the staff? Did you come before Mr. Colson?
No. Was here? I joined the staff in September 1970. Mm-hmm. I think it was the 20th or something like that, towards the end of the month anyhow. But I worked on his staff since then. Yeah.
And you've been a staff assistant?
No, my title's been administrative aide.
Administrative aide to Mr. Colson.
To Mr. Colson. In the beginning, I was working for, with George Bell, who since left the staff, but always on Mr. Colson's staff. And even before Mr. Bell left, I was pretty much doing work for Mr. Colson. Mm-hmm.
What were you doing before that?
When I first came on the staff, I had a major project to tie, which had been started by somebody else, and I don't know what the person's name was. It was a contact book program, which I think you've seen some of our contact books. Giving the most important business leaders, educators, labor leaders, ethnics, bankers. It's about a 20-volume series of books which we used, which we felt would be helpful in having people's names there when we would need to implement a presidential program or to get assistance on a presidential program, this kind of knowing who's who.
This was your first assignment,
and that was the big,
under Mr. Bell.
Well, it was under Mr. Bell, but really it was Mr. Colson's directive that this is what we were to finish, and that was a massive undertaking. We whipped that up, but I did immediately do some research work for Mr. Colson, which I have been doing ever since,
any special projects that came up that he would want me to do. That was one of my responsibilities and a main part of my responsibilities on his staff.
Could you start with your project on these contact books and describe how you went about assembling the names and...
I don't know how they first started out. I'm not sure if this is an extension of maybe the project that was started when the administration first started on going through who's who and sending out a major mail, which I just heard about. I never found out the details about it, but that may have been the result of it. But I have a feeling that the books were culled down from contacts that Mr. Polson had, Mr. Bell had, a lot of staff people had, from associations, probably leading associations that we would be dealing with or we had been dealing with at that point. And I think that that's, and also probably, I'm sure, a lot of presidential political advisors were instrumental in culling down the list, because there were a phenomenal number of business people across the country, small, large, and medium-sized businesses with several executives, obviously. And we would obviously want the cream of the crop and the ones who would, we felt would be effective and open to this administration's thinking and policy. Although it was not entirely... It was not certainly a Republican list down the line. I mean, every single person who's in our books is not a Republican, but just somebody who at least had an open mind and would, could be helpful, would be open to any... ...to us. It was kind of a two-way street. So that the book putting together, by the time I got it, was pretty much to finalize it, to call some of the information which had been maybe handwritten and retyped or this kind of thing, and to put it into a logical order and into a presentable form. And I think we made one copy also for the president. I think we have one copy, and I think the president has one copy. I'm not sure if the president did get a copy at this point. I think he may have gotten a detailed memo on exactly what we had, and if he ever wanted anything, he could borrow our books. That's right, I think that's what it was, because we decided it would just be too many books to have floating around over there someplace.
Where is your copy? Is
they're
it
inside.
Used?
Yeah, I presume that the Baruti people will take it. It's in room 187. I would imagine that that will now be used by him. A new group of contact books are being worked on right now. So these books are the books until the new forms mm-hmm. are finished and the new books are finished.
Was the, you mentioned the who's who list that were, I believe, put out by Mr. Fleming's office. Or the
yeah, the personnel, wasn't it?
Yes. And was your effort to gather these names for personnel reasons?
No.
What was the major goal? Well,
to have names of people when and information on people that would be would help us in putting together perhaps an appropriate social list. For example, when the Prime Minister of England would come for a state visit, there would probably be a dinner for him, as there was last night, and we would use these books to help us pick out people who had not been invited recently, because in the books, as you will note, there's a place for the most recent time that the President has phoned them, the most recent time that he's received a presidential letter, or has met with the President, or has been to a social function, and then there's also a column for staff contacts. So we kind of want to make sure that these people were well taken care of and that the same people weren't always brought in. This is another reason that these books were put together. And we also used the books to pull qualified people, appropriate people for presidential commissions and boards. Obviously there are several, many presidential boards and commissions which have vacancies from time to time. And you just don't pull
you
names out of a hat. And we would make recommendations to the Malik operation, right? In many cases based on the information that we had in the books, the people we had in our books. Mm-hmm. So that was another reason we had them. Every time the president went on a major television address or held a press conference, we would take names of people from these books, maybe 60, 75, 100 names, maybe 200, depending on the size of the program that they wanted to do at that particular time, and call these people and
ask them if they saw this president, what their reactions were, what their comments were, and this kind of thing. So that the books had also that purpose too, giving us kind of names of people we could pull to call.
What was the purpose of the
purpose was to just see if how the president's announcements were going across, whether people had criticisms, whether they had constructive criticism, questions that we could then follow up with memorandums or with explanation sheets from here to clarify.
And did you do the calling in this case?
The calling was done by, I did it several times, and the rest of the staff people, maybe some nights 10 or 15 people were pulled to make the phone calls. And then the phone calls were immediately called into the West Wing so that the president, before he went to bed that night, had the comments. And you know, labor leaders would be called, business people would be called, educators would be called. And they certainly were not all Republicans, and so that we had a good cross-section. We would try to do it that way. I would pull the lists that, of people to be called based on the fact that they not had been contacted in the last time the president did this or this kind of thing, just trying to make sure it was balanced, and also to get a good geographic spread.
Mm-hmm.
So we would do it across the country. So that's another reason.
And were the responses documented in the books then?
No, because there's not, first of all, you'll see on, there's one page only for each person. And there just was not enough room. However, the date that they were called was documented, and I'm sure down in Central Files, all of their comments have been saved.
Made a memo on the conversation?
I would imagine so.
If you did the calls.
We make the calls, and then the way the program is set up, it changed from time to time. But generally speaking, we would take the calls, take the message that each person said, or the comment that each person said, and we would pick up the phone and call somebody in the West Wing who was standing by with a typewriter and dictate it to them. So we never had a copy here. Occasionally we did our own typing here on the staff.
Who did you call in the West Wing?
It would probably be in the, sometimes in the congressional, depending where the phones were, where we would have room for phones. I don't really remember. It varies, I think, from time to time. Dick Howard may have more information on this because he kind of would operate the whole program and get it going and set it up.
He was responsible for the...
Yeah, setting up the calls.
Mm-hmm.
I was responsible for pulling the lists and occasionally helping out and making the phone calls to these people.
What information did the books actually have? Did they have a short biographical sketch?
If we could find something in Who's Who on these people, it was clipped and it was attached to the book, because when we send people in for boards and commissions, we kind of, it's helpful to know what these people's interests were and their background is. I mean, if there's an agriculture commission that's coming up, you're certainly not going to send somebody in who's interested in classical music only and has absolutely no interest in in agriculture or something like that. So that was it. And those books, once that project was done, it was just an ongoing background and information, a wealth of information, and I would add to it. I'd be the one who, I read something like 5 newspapers and scanned 5 newspapers a day to find out who had changed position at what company or what labor leader had resigned or retired and was replaced by whom and who had died and this kind of thing. And then I would advise Peter Flanagan's staff, because I think they had a computer running. You know, that certain changes had been made, and make the changes in our books. So that was basically it.
Where in, obviously these special interest groups that you were trying to get names for would overlap some of the other offices outside of Mr. Carlson's office. Did you work with any of the other offices in the books?
I think the books are a result of a lot of input from all the other offices that had any interest in that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that we didn't do it just on our own. I'm sure that before I came on the project that probably Flanagan's staff was tapped, and I'm sure Harry Dent's office was tapped, and I'm sure we had a book on editors and publishers, but it was never finished. We decided that it was a project that would be far more extensive than holding it in a little 3-ring notebook, and so that was never finished. And we had a lawyer's contact book, which was never completed. All the other books we had, religious leaders,
Father McLaughlin was not on the staff at the time that the book was put together, but I'm sure that there were some experts on the staff who had, probably Henry Cashin, that contact with the Catholics and knew kind of people that we should maintain a liaison with and this kind of thing. So that's what we did.
What else were you doing while you were under Mr. Bell?
Socialists, I was responsible for putting together a list of appropriate people to invite to major functions for which our office was tapped for input. It would be a state dinner, it could be worship service, it could be just a reception or an evening at the White House. And we were tapped because we had the contact books. So I would use the books and determine, first of all, we'd have to determine who the visitor was. If we certainly had an Arab, we would not be inviting a whole bunch of Jewish type of people and this kind of thing. But that was one responsibility. Another was handling the presidential proclamations. I handled that. It's one of the projects I handled on my own. While Mr. Bell was here, we used his signature, obviously, as a presidential appointee. And then when he left the staff, we used Henry Cashin's signature. Basically, I would receive the 50-odd number of ceremony copies or the duplicates of the proclamation, which were done on a very lovely embossed like paper with the presidential seal. And I would determine whether organizations or memberships, somebody out of the government would receive these. And I would prepare the mailing list or have somebody prepare it if it was an organizational type of thing. Have an organization submit names of their people that they thought should receive it. And this was one way of maintaining liaison with these people. And many of these proclamations are ones that have been issued since the 1930s or even earlier than that. It's done year after year after year. So the problem was that after the first year was completed and the second year of proclamations came around, which were in many cases the same, so obviously the same subject, although different text. To have to think of new ways of
you didn't send it to the same people.
No. Very extensive files have been sent down to central files year by year by each name of each proclamation of who we sent it to and the kind of letter that we sent out. We sent out a present, a White House letter with either George Bell or Henry Cashin's signature. So that was one. A lot of little projects that cropped up. Under George Bell, we started the first key state list, which was to determine the top people that could be effective and helpful to the administration in the 11, which we thought at that time, 11 key states. Mr. Bell started the list and I helped him. And then after he left the staff, I, Mr. Colson's direction, took over and did the other 33 states on my own. Two or three weeks. A monumental project.
The other 33?
I'm not subtracting right. Let's see, 11 from 50, whatever it is.
All right.
30.
The rest of the state.
Yeah, the rest of the state.
39.
So that was it. That was the key people state.
Wait, how did you go about finding the names of the key people?
Well,
was through the Republican?
Yeah. I contacted the Republican chairman. I think at the time I picked up and did the other states, we had also selected the Nixon chairman, who in many cases were similar to the Republican national chairman, in some cases a little bit different, so I would contact both. I contacted congressional leaders in the districts that we were looking at, or in the states, obviously, that we were looking at. People here on the staff who happened to be from the states and knew those states well. The governors, I called the governors.
Did you ever work with Ron Walker's office on that? I know.
No.
Just because.
No. Call labor leaders, call educators, people that I knew of and that you could help us with an input and this kind of thing. So, and I pulled the whole thing together.
Was this done also with congressional liaisons' assistance?
No, not at all. No, they explain to me why you asked that question.
It just might be logical to me, I don't, because they usually handle things which are going to pertain to the districts.
Oh, no. This was a completely different project, and we handled it here, no, congressional relations. I got on the phone myself and called the congressman or their administrative assistants and handled it here, strictly here. No, I thought maybe you meant because I had mentioned the congressional offices before using the phones, and we just use their offices once in a while for the phone projects, but no.
It was just a matter of using the space,
the space,
the square footage,
yeah,
and
not their,
the people.
Not making them do the work.
Okay.
Then there were, when Mr. Bell was here, he ran the first Blair House dinner program, which ran for about 6 or 8 months. And he would invite labor leaders and educators. I think those are the two categories. And I would do the inviting for them, again, based on our books and the kinds of attention that these people had not had, and economists. And I would invite them in behalf of the president at the Blair House. And Mr. Bell would sometimes host the evening at the Blair House. We would have speakers from the Pentagon or the Defense Department or one of the departments pertaining on the discussion that they wanted to have that night. And the Flanagan office would worry about the business leaders that were being invited. And then after Mr. Bell left, the program was stopped for a few months, and then I think Bill Radigan started it again, but it took over. It was a little bit run a little bit differently.
I'm not familiar with that. Is it,
well,
was it an attempt to just bring in labor business?
Yeah. It was at the time when the president was in the middle of, I guess, the China trip and the Moscow trip, and social events were not taking place here very often, and we felt that we needed to have more contact with these people to get them in on a smaller group level, to talk over any problems that they've got, and to know maybe more about what we were doing, so when labor leaders would come in, they might have some problems that they would come in and be able to discuss. If there's a group of only, say, 20 or 30, I can't remember exactly what the number was, but it was a very small, it was a sit-down dinner, so it was 16, I think, that Blair House dining room table could only seat, plus two or three administration VIPs, and it worked out very nicely, I understand. They accomplished a great deal, and it was an improvement in the contact and in the liaison. But now, Bill Radigan took it over. It changed a little bit, but I would imagine that the basis for it was the same.
But it was initiated in his office.
Yeah, it was initiated. We handled one part of it, and then the Flanagan people had another part. This was the president's request.
Are there other?
Then Mr. Bell left the staff, which is before he left the staff, he was pretty much handling labor problems, and I'm gradually, before he switched to this, Marshall will probably be able to tell you more about that, I may be a little bit wrong, but as far as I was concerned, I started doing much, much more for Chuck also. In fact, I was only responsible to him at that point, and definitely so when George Bell left the staff, there's no question.
Do you know when that was?
Mr. Bell got ill. About a year ago. Just about now, I think. Or maybe it was March or April. Marcia, I'm sure, can tell you. I can't remember, I'm sorry.
I know you were working in the same office with Marcia.
Yeah, somewhere. She was his secretary.
She was his secretary. Did she take over your responsibilities when you went to?
No.
No. Boston entirely?
No. No, she continued to work with Mr. Bell and a lot of Mr. Bell's. The things that Mr. Bell had been working on shifted. For example, when he first came on, he was worried about labor and educators and business people and trying to maintain liaison with all these kinds of people, and also with associations. And then when he became more specialized in the labor area, then other staff members started getting some of his work. And I took over the proclamation project, other than his signature. I needed him, and
Did you initiate, back to the proclamation, and I hate to argue, but did you initiate the ceremony for the signing of the proclamation,
no.
things when they had
no.
this?
In fact, there was...
You just received the finished product.
I received the finished product, and these were done... The president, in most cases, has to issue the proclamation because Congress has legislated it. And so it's written up by the Ray Price staff, or rewritten by the Ray Price staff, and then sent over. He signs it, and almost never at a ceremony. I mean, he just signed it, and that was it. And then we would, the day or two after he signed it, I would get the duplicate, the ceremonial copy. And then shortly thereafter, send it out to the right people.
Did you distribute all of the proclamations, or I know...
Just those 50 duplicates. Then anything else that went out to press release types or things like that, that was handled by somebody else. All I got was those ceremonials.
What I was asking is, in all cases, was it this office that did the distribution? I know, for instance, one of the rare cases where they did have a ceremony for it was for the Youth Appreciation Week.
Right.
And I talked with Margot Maruzzi.
Yep.
Did you distribute those, or did she?
That was one exception, I think. In fact, I think that's the only exception. I can't remember whose signature. Occasionally, if the proclamation would fit into somebody's bailiwick that was working specifically, for example, with Mike Malzano, when he came on the staff, if there were an ethnic-oriented type of proclamation, we would give it to him to sign it, but I would do it all. I mean, I would work with him for the mailing list, but I would prepare the letter, have correspondents do the letter and the labeling, this kind of thing, and he would do the signing on it. And then the stripping desk would do the mailing for us. Margot, in that case, it was that one. Did you say student government one? No, you said the
appreciation week, I believe. And that was the
that may have gone out under Finch's signature. In that case, I think I gave it all over to Margot and she did it. Then there was one other one that General Haig took each year, POWs, and he handled it with the POW families. But other than that, the other proclamations were all done here. We kept control of them here.
One thing we obviously know that because you frequently ask us about recent telephone calls or whatever. Was it under George Beall that you did the recommended phone calls for the president?
Yeah, that was another project. That's right. Presumably the office had that responsibility all the time. And one of the functions that I had was to... I guess the whole staff did too, but I, especially since I was reading some of the newspapers, to keep trying to spot the kinds of people that the president may want to call from time to time. But obviously as the schedule became more and more involved with this Vietnam business and the China trip and the Moscow trip and all those kinds of things, the casual type of phone call to somebody who did something outstanding in their hometown, I think became less and less, at least from our standpoint. We didn't submit those kinds of phone calls. But that brings to mind a special project which I worked on. And this was, again, as in my capacity, after George Beall left here. In fact, it was New Year's Day, I think, that Chuck Colson called me at home. And I said that the president wants a list of 500 VIPs put together for kinds of phone calls he should be making throughout the year. So that was the beginning of 1971 at 8:30 in the morning. And so I put together that list. Again, I got on the phone and I called all of the staff people here who represented the kinds of people that we wanted. Barbara Franklin for women, Harry Dent for political types. I called the Klein operation thing for some press people. Took people from our VIP books, called Rosemary Woods, I think, for friends' names, and I called, I think, some governors, I called some congressional people, and called together a list like this, gave it to Mr. Colson, and he whittled it down to the 500 that I gave him more than that. Worked that out, and then each week after that, then we decided we would submit these phone calls to the president for these people's birthday. And I would then write up the justification, why this person should be called, why he's important, what the occasion was. And then it would go in after Mr. Colson approved of the final choice to the president. and in many cases, letters were written. Few phone calls were made, and that was it.
In other than this, well, the list of 500
is downstairs in Central Files.
Were you directed? Were you trying to direct your efforts towards any particular group?
No.
Special interest group?
No. Cross section, just from all the kinds of people I gave you as the people I contacted. It had to be of, and celebrities too. Henry Cashin, I think, gave me a list of celebrities. We wanted a very good mixed group. We had to take special care that the geographic distribution was fair, that everybody was not from the Northeast Corridor, everybody's not from California, and that we had the middle part of the country well represented too.
Mm-hmm. What about you? You mentioned the earlier types of phone calls where he would call someone who had done an outstanding deed or something like this. Did you get many of those recommendations from Mort Allen?
And we would do that. And I think Mort started picking up doing a lot of that stuff for us too. Because obviously, with all the newspapers that they read, the TV and radio things that they monitor. One that I remember, Loretta Young did something. In Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, about 2 years ago. Something to do with retarded children, or it was a very fine project. It was written up in the New York Times, and it was written up, I think, in the Post. And I think we all picked it up. So we sent it in to the president as a recommended phone call. It did go to him. Now, I cannot remember whether or not he made it, or he sent her a letter, or it was ignored, or what. But these are the kinds of things that he did. And to the little children who may have saved a brother or a sister or a friend, these kinds of things were picked up. And I'm sure, perhaps, that the president continued to make them, although I started concentrating on this 500 list, since it was a well-thought-out, culled list, which we thought the president might be able to take some time and do, and make these phone calls.
Well, obviously, this list of 500 concentrated more on VIPs.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to have the immediate.
They had your religious leaders on, they had some cardinals, they had some celebrities, some sports guys that he would enjoy talking to or might have an occasion to talk to. The business, some business people, some old friends, some political types, some state chairmen. I think some congressional types. No, but the congressional types, the Korologos operation, or the Tinnens operation, always submits birthday calls for. So that was, we didn't need to worry about that. But that was a good cross-section list.
What were some of the major projects that you worked on for Mr. Coulson? Particularly those after Mr. Bauer.
Well, I had the responsibility. Coordinating all the names that this pretty much many of the names that this office sent in, the Coulson operation sent in, for boards and commissions, based on input I would get from other staff members, input from our contact books, and the like. Every time that the Malik operation would advise us that there was, or the Kingsley operation would advise us there was an opening on boards and commissions, I would go to work and put together the names and justification for their being appointed. And then I would sit in occasionally a political coordinators meeting that would result from these inputs to try to determine which of the many people who were being recommended would be fine. Go on. The contact book program continued. VIP telephone call, I told you about the recognition of socialists. I continued to handle the socialist responsibility. And many times I did, there were a lot of research projects that I did for Mr. Coulson. If he needed background information on something, he'd ask me to do it. Or a particular piece of, an old piece of legislation or something like that, or if it were just general research and understanding some smaller points on a particular problem or subject or something like that, he'd call me.
it's on political. Just innumerable projects, obviously, that I can't pinpoint. I think I've given you the most major ones.
Are there any of those which stand out to you now as being ones which would not be well documented in the files, which would have been done mostly over the telephone or in personal conversation?
No, I think any time I did research for him, I submitted the information to him in a memo, which I think it should be done.
Were there certain sources of information which you used more often than others?
I used
a wide variety of subjects.
Yes. The Republican National Committee, Bob Chase's office, was very helpful in tracking down a lot of information for me. Various government bureaus, agencies, departments, you know, depending on what the problem was, to go to them for a clarification or piece of paper, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular concentration in any area of the request? Were they usually more politically oriented or more involved?
Yeah, in many cases, yes, they were politically oriented. Not entirely. And it would sort of come in the past briefs, I'm sure. And in those cases, then that's why Bob Chase's office would be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same office
that Donna Kingwell was at before she came over here research?
Was she researching on the Hill?
I didn't know that. She worked on that Miracode system.
What was that?
The Miracode system that they have.
Up at the RNC?
Retrieving.
Oh, I didn't know she did that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that system was very, very helpful. We used it very, very much. I think I set it up shortly after 1970. No, I had it before 70. Thank you.
And
obviously, in many cases, the president would like to know what, especially during the election year.
Sure.
Okay.
And some of the research projects, like Mr. Colson wanted the Gallup and the Harris polls, well, this is, I'm sure, at the direction of the president, analyzed, and we would keep track, of, especially during this year, of how they were changing, and it was my responsibility to work on demographic studies and try to put together a whole series of these polls and get some sort of a continuing chart done so that it would mean something to them when they sat down in their meetings. It would be helpful, and so I worried about that. I did election returns analysis. I did opinion research. Kind of mixed up with the polls, I guess, and also trying to figure out if. Oh, yeah, what reactions we were getting, basically on the polls. And then background information on associations. If many times I would be called because I had the contact books, and I also maintained the association directories here in my office, and would be called for information on associations, membership, what kind of associations they were. I also maintained some liaison with some associations, so I could get a reading whether a group were tended to be pro-administration or against the administration. We could ask them to be helpful, or we should just stay away from them. And then some. I did some analysis on issues and some analysis on legislation. Sometimes what our opponents were doing, if they were issuing statements, the president, I'm sure, was always concerned or interested in knowing. Although I didn't do very much of this. What Muskie might want to say, anybody else might want to say. But these are things that he would pick up in the newspaper, so it wasn't really anything.
Well, then are you saying that you were kind of pulling together some of the opposition research that was being done by the Republican National Committee and
no, they were pulling it down, and they pulled it together. We certainly didn't have the facilities to do it.
Well, or pulling it from their end product, bringing it to Mr. Colson or whoever's.
Oh, attention. We would see it. I think we were on their mailing list or something. This stuff, I'm sure. I don't know what he got, but I know I would occasionally get something from Bob if I would be talking with him or if I were interested in something.
Did you do much research for Mr. Colson in direct connection with his 915 meetings during the campaign?
Well, which ones specifically?
The ones that I guess John Osborne wrote about a little bit.
I didn't see it. What do you mean?
The meetings which were attended by Ed Thaler and Mr. Colson chaired.
No, I don't think so. Unless it was some piece
Desmond
of information
Barker.
that he wanted to bring up at any meeting. I have no idea. Many times he would just say to me, you know, I need this background and I need this, or what did so and so say on this, or occasionally, you know, even for his, if he gave a speech or somebody else was giving a speech, you know, I would track down what did Prime Minister Macmillan of England say on such and such a thing, or what was his last address. I can remember hunting down for about 3 months a former Prime Minister Macmillan speech on labor, and we had to go through USIA, and we had to go to London, and we had to go all over. But it was an important speech, and Mr. Colson wanted it, so we got it.
Did you ever do any speech drafting?
No.
Did Mr. Colson have a writer on the staff?
He must.
It just occurred to me.
Yeah. I don't know if. How he handled any of that, I would not know, but I might guess perhaps Steve Karalakis might have done some research or some writing for him for speeches. But that's something you'll have to check with them, because I really don't know.
What other offices on Mr. Colson's staff did you work most closely with?
All of them. Oh, yeah, very much so.
Well, I know his operation is so diverse.
Yeah. Now, I worked with Des Barker occasionally, and I worked a great deal with, there isn't almost any office, I mean, with Bud Evans, with Mike Balzano, with Henry Cashin, Bill Radigan, Mel Stevens, I mean, just, no. My responsibilities were just overlapping at all the offices, and it just seemed like because I would, with the recommendations that I had to worry about, I certainly wanted to tap all of our people who had any special responsibilities on the staff, and so therefore, if I'm in contact with one, I'm in contact with all of them. Saw them at staff meetings, this kind of thing. So.
Mm-hmm. What about offices still within the White House or the Executive Office, but outside of Mr. Colson's office?
That I would work with a lot.
In frequent contact.
When it came to a social event, obviously, with the social office and with Rosemary Woods' office. Occasionally with Harry Dent's office, Ken Clawson's office, which reminds me. Last summer, Chuck asked me to see if I could pull together a project, which apparently some other people on the staff had tried for 6 or 7 months and met with presidential disapproval. This was a project to pinpoint the leading anchormen, radio and TV, in all 50 states. So this was a project out of Ken Clawson's office, so I went down and took over that project and had some of his people give me a hand, because it was physically impossible to call all 50 state contacts by myself. So had them working on it too, and we pulled it together, and it was used by the president to bring in these radio and TV anchormen for receptions. In fact, I think there were 2 receptions last June. That was a monumental project.
Yes, I remember this.
And I was delighted because I got a very nice note from Chuck on that, and it's nice to know that we could pull something like that together. I think it was one thing about the staff, it was just a glorious working experience here, because the brain power, I think Chuck has one of the most unusual brains, and he's just phenomenal. And so that I think it kind of inspired his whole staff to just work that much harder and to always work for perfection. And we kind of label ourselves as the in-house working staff, hard workers. But there were constantly lots of projects going on that we were asked to do that may not normally have fallen into our responsibility, but I guess because we could get it done, we did it.
On your Anchorman project, was that coordinated very closely with Lord Klein's office?
I worked with Ken Clausen on it. I was assigned the project by Chuck Colson, and obviously because it came out of there, the Klein shop, I think what I did was go through, if I remember correctly, let me backtrack a little bit, maybe 20 or 30 of the leading anchormen, and what I did was pull together all the recommendations we had gotten from maybe 6 or 7 different sources, maybe from some governors, maybe from some senators and some congressmen and the Republican people, and maybe some other context that we may have had, and where there was duplication. It was obviously that was a very strong name in that state, and we would set it up that way. And then I just turned over the project to them with the names of all the people that I had. And I think then they whittled it down, because at the time they didn't know how many names they were going to want. I think they didn't know that they were going to have, first of all, 2 receptions, which they finally did. And then I think it was supposed to remain as a contact program, too, to maintain, to expand, I think, the White House contact. Now, whether or not that was done, I can't tell, because I did the project, and then it was turned over for them to manipulate it.
Did you attempt to evaluate the anchorman's posture towards the administration?
Yeah, that was very important. Yeah, surely. We certainly didn't want somebody who certainly already closed the door to the president and his administration. That would certainly not lend itself to improving relations with that kind of person. So these people tended to be neutral, at least, and this is what our main concern was, that they at least be neutral. We certainly did not expect that they would be full-fledged Republicans and diehard Nixonites.
How many did you end up selecting for each state, approximately?
Some states, like California, I'm sure we had 20 or 30 down for, maybe 50. For some reason, a total figure of 1,700 and something rings a bell.
Mm-hmm. And all these people were contacted then at some time?
Not all. It was whittled down, I think, to a workable amount. Well, hopefully the whole list was contacted by press releases or something like that, but for social purposes, it was whittled down, I think, to maybe 400 or 500 people. So it was a fun project, but it was a massive one.
Something I didn't ask you, did you have an immediate staff? Was anyone working for you?
No, unfortunately I didn't. Which made many projects sometimes very, very difficult to handle. But any time that I had something monumental like this, I was able to call in assistance, typing staff, this kind of thing. So I would get some help there. So it worked out okay.
But
I've got a one-man operation.
You didn't have anybody to keep track of your files for you, so you would be the person.
Would
be familiar with them.
They've all been turned over to Trudy or to Central Files. One project I put together, which I gave to Trudy this morning, which is an opponent's file.
I'm sorry.
Opponent's file. The kind of people that were definitely not going to bother to give us the time of day, wanted nothing to do with this administration, and these are the kinds of people that it was determined at one point or another, I don't know if anything's been done with it or has been done, that it should be put together so at least we know that these are the kind of people don't want to be invited for social events, don't want to be serving on presidential boards or commissions and this kind of thing. So kind of went with our contact program. We had to have both sides of the picture. So that was another project that was my responsibility. Pulled together, and obviously I pulled it together by talking to all the people on our staff who knew these people, who knew of these people. Who this kind of
these covered generally the same interest groups for groups of people that were covered in the contact list.
I mean, was that a long list? I mean, was it? Are you talking about?
Oh, it's not several thousand. No, it's. It's just some of the obvious people, but maybe it's not obvious to everybody. It's obvious to us compared to me, mm-hmm. because it's, you know, we work on these kinds of things. But I don't know if anything's being done with it now, or I don't know if anything specifically were done with it. But I would imagine that somebody who might appear on that list would certainly not be appointed to a presidential board or commission. Mm-hmm. And like. So I guess that's about it.
Where are you? You're going to labor.
I will be at labor working for Secretary Brennan as his special assistant for research. And if you need to reach me, it's 961-2604.
Do you have a permanent address?
3414, New Labor, or Labor Department, for the time being, but I think it'd be for 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm. What about a permanent home address?
2121 P Street Northwest, mm-hmm. Apartment 425. I have this little thing that I typed up a while ago, giving a brief description of about 8 of the key projects that I worked on. Let me Xerox it and give it to you.
All right.
Unless you don't need it.
No, we would like to have that to keep in the file.
Okay, I'll Xerox it for you. Did I give it to you before?
Not this one.
Not
you
this
gave
one?
Me a very short little squib on
okay.
you.
Oh, yes. Right.
It was from your resume.
I got a Xerox next door.
Your resume.
Do that. I got it too.